John Wilson was the Salvatore Professor of History and Traditional Values at Hillsdale College. He is now enjoying retirement after 42 years of teaching. John joined the society in 1976, and he also served two terms as president of the Philadelphia Society from 1998 to 2000. John?
Thanks, Victoria. It's always so much fun following Ken Cribb. I think I just better agree and sit down. We are all being so wonderfully irenic here this morning that I think it's probably time for me to lower the tone slightly, at least to offer a caution. In offering this caution, I begin with a parable. A 62-year-old blonde-haired grandmother forgot to take off cross-stitch scissors as she approached an airline checkpoint. What followed was that she was patted down, she was virtually strip-searched, and they took her weapon away, these scissors. And she looked at me for help, and of course, because I could do nothing about it, I utterly failed her. Now, we move from that short parable back to 1966, when President Lyndon Johnson announced what he said was his overriding rule. Quote, "Our foreign policy must always be an extension of our domestic policy. Our safest guide to do what we do abroad is what we do at home." Now, it will be no surprise to members of this society that foreign and domestic policies always reflect each other. It's a truism. Now, when foreign policy is in the hands of progressives, they usually reason from the domestic to the foreign. But that doesn't mean, of course, that the truism doesn't work also the other way around. LBJ wanted to make a great society in Vietnam and prove it by what he very often said to his cabinet members, by coonskins on the wall, that is, proofs of good things that we were doing to create democracy in Southeast Asia. And in the process of attempting to do that, of course, although we did not become anywhere near as destabilizing a force as the communists, nevertheless, we became a significant destabilizing force in that area of the world. Now, Walter Lippmann warned us as early as 1938 that the dominant dogma of the age, as he called it, was that government has the ability to make us happy. Now, if government can make us happy, then it should follow, I would think, then that using our military might to make other people happy should not make Americans less happy. I'm afraid, however, and we have ample evidence of this in the history of many of our foreign policy adventures since the Philippines, that those who think that regime change is a proper and valid goal of foreign policy almost always tend to think that our republic is made of Plato. In other words, social engineering abroad leads inevitably to social engineering at home and vice versa. This was one of the great lessons learned by Robert Taft, as a matter of fact, when he went abroad with the inquiry with Woodrow Wilson after World War I, and was appalled and shocked and marked for life by the enormous adventure in social engineering that they were instructed to accomplish. As a matter of fact, I heard yesterday someone suggest that we needed, as part of our apparatus currently, a department or some sort of apparatus of nation building. I couldn't help but think that if Don Lipsett were with us, he'd have had the stationery printed before the end of the session. Now, the opposite of conservative, as Ken has so clearly told us, is not liberal or progressive. The opposite of conservative is ideologue. Our great achievement as a nation, in fact, our only real achievement, our only real unique achievement, is limited government. And too often, the march away from limited government is led by the band playing the dominant dogma of the age, conducted by ideologues who used to call themselves liberals and progressives, but more recently have begun to insist that they are Republicans and conservatives. I had a good talk with David Hackett Fisher, who was a very good historian, after he had read a piece a number of years ago that I wrote called World War II, The Great Liberal War. This was not a discussion of the military or foreign policy led by New Dealers guaranteed the demise of the Constitution. As I say, he may have been a little gloomy, but he wasn't all that far off. David Hackett Fisher argued that World War II, as he said it, unleashed the full potential of American democracy. I replied that the way we fought the war wounded the American Constitutional Republic nearly unto death. The sad thing is that both of us may have been right. Now, our foreign policy failures since World War II, and there have been many. There was a big one that wasn't a failure, of course, extremely important. And I don't mean to dismiss that. But our foreign policy failures have been almost all due to sound principles being transformed into ideology, sometimes intentionally, and sometimes by circumstances. For example, if one were to read some of the great foreign policy documents that we have written and followed since World War II, if one reads, for example, NSC 68, National Security Council Document 68, it bound us not only to a course of action, but to a course of action that put in the hands of ideologues led us to several important follies. For 26 years, as a matter of fact, until that document was declassified shortly after the last helicopter left Saigon. Or, if one reads carefully Prospect for America, a volume published in 1960 as a result of the Rockefeller panels of the previous 4 years, one finds a rather frightening book that ended up sending one ideologue after another into top policy positions during the Kennedy and Johnson administrations, and indeed administrations right on up to the current one of Bush II. And if one reads these documents carefully, it should be no surprise that my wife and Peggy Noonan and others get strip searched at airports. Ben Franklin, whose contributions to the Republic I sometimes quibble with, said famously that they that can give up essential liberty to obtain a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety. Now, National Security Strategy 2002, which has been widely acclaimed and widely criticized, as a matter of fact, as a statement of conservative foreign policy principles, in fact, stands directly in the tradition of NSC 68 and of Prospect for America. NSS 2002 is supposedly innovative because it warns that the United States, quote, will exercise our right of self-defense by the first use of armed force. In fact, the earlier documents both implied the same doctrine. And all three, if read carefully, spend far greater amounts of ink putting together comprehensive political, economic, social, and educational plans to democratize the world. This used to be called liberal internationalism. Now that it's associated with Republicans and conservatives, it may mean that we have all bought into the dominant dogma of the age, and that is my caution. I think that in an earlier time, George Kennan and Walter Lippmann were among those people who were very important conservative foreign policy thinkers. They constantly cautioned us to keep our policies measured, humble, and especially prudent. Not only because of the overarching threat of nuclear war, but because of all of the unknown consequences that come up from almost every ambitious foreign policy operation. If we any longer wish to maintain a constitutional republic of limited government, then I would offer again the caution. What should our role in the world be? As small a role as possible, consistent with our safety and consistent with our ideals as a people. Thank you.